Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, y'all, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today, I'm super excited to finally have an economist on the show. We have Rick Sharga, CEO and founder of the CJ Patrick Company. And finally, we are going to talk about the real estate market with an actual economist. So you can stop listening to me say, well, I'm not an economist, but this is what I think. So, Rick, how's it going?
I'm doing well, Avery. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. Do you want to just give our listeners a little bit of background and an introduction?
Sure. I hate to do this to you after that great introduction, but technically I'm not an economist either. I am a market intelligence analyst. I've been in the real estate and mortgage industry for the past 25 years, neck deep in real estate and lending data. And so I do get a lot of opportunities to go out and talk to people in the industry at different events, conferences. I've probably been quoted as much as anybody else by the media for the last 20 years when it comes to real estate and mortgage industry trends. So my company is a market intelligence firm, and we specialize in working with companies in the real estate and mortgage industries. To help them see what's going on in the marketplace and analyze it for their businesses.
Love it. We don't have to put a label on things. So it sounds like you are well involved in all of the data and what's going on in the market. So I'm really, really excited to have you on. So I guess my first question is, let's talk about the market in 2024. What has the real estate market looked like just across the board, just kind of broad strokes? What's happened in the market this year?
It's been a pretty bad year, actually, if we're going to rip the Band-Aid off and get started right away. we're very likely to end the year with fewer than 4 million existing home sales. That would be the lowest number we've seen since 1996 or 1997. It's the third consecutive year where we'll have sold fewer homes than the year before. We sold about 4 million last year. We sold about 5 million the year before and about 6 million the year before that. So the trend hasn't been terribly positive. Home prices, on the other hand, have continued to go up. And because home prices and mortgage rates are higher than they've been for a while, the affordability for people looking to buy a house is the worst it's been in 40 years. So affordability is awful. Inventory is limited. The number of sales is down. But other than that, it's been a terrific year.
Other than the fact that it's been the worst year ever, it's been a terrific year. Yeah. So you said a few things that I want to touch on there. So fewer homes have been sold. Mm-hmm. So you would think that, well, because nobody's buying, and properties are sitting on the market for ages compared to what they used to a few years ago, why have prices not gone down?
I think we make some assumptions sometimes that aren't entirely based in reality. And I've heard the same phrase you just used a lot recently about people talking about homes sitting on the market for a long period of time. On average right now, across the country, it takes about 24, 25 days to sell a property once it's listed, less than a month. Now that's way up from where we were a couple of years ago when you could sell a house in 7 days or less. But historically speaking, that's getting us back toward more normal timelines for how long it takes to sell a house once you put it on the market. The reality is, and despite the fact that I said I'm not a classically trained economist, this is kind of Econ 101. Prices are going up because of supply and demand, which is probably the oldest economic theorem of all. We have the largest number of young adults between the ages of 25 and 34 in the history of the United States. And the reason that age group is particularly important is because the average age of a first-time home buyer today is 35. So we have millions of people who are rapidly approaching that prime age to buy their first home. the research universally shows that this age group of adults wants to own homes at exactly the same rate or even at a higher rate than previous generations have. So there's a lot of pent-up demand, and the number of homes available for sale today is up about 28% from a year ago, but it's down probably 30 or 40% from where we were back in 2019, which was the last year really prior to the pandemic. So there's just not a lot of inventory. There's a lot of pent-up demand, people looking to buy these properties. They compete for the properties that are available. It might take a few weeks longer to sell the house, but ultimately it's selling for the list price, or in some markets above the list price. And that supply and demand imbalance is really what's keeping home prices up.
Are you afraid of saturation? Well, join Short Term Shop Plus and let the saturated be afraid of you. Become the best in the business at stsplus.com.
What do you think? Is there any sign of any relief of that pressure coming up?
Yeah, let's talk about affordability in general. I mentioned it was the worst it's been in 40 years, and that goes back to the 1980s, before you were born. And back then, mortgage rates were 18, 20%, and that's why homes were so unaffordable. There are three legs to the affordability stool, just to kind of oversimplify things. There's mortgage rates, there's home prices, and then there's wages, because people have to be able to make money in order to buy a house. I don't think we're going to see home prices crash. We see a lot of people on YouTube breathlessly talking about the coming home price crash. They're usually trying to sell you a multi-$1,000 training program to get you ready. I would encourage all of your viewers not to buy those programs. but the reality is we probably will see home prices. We're already seeing home prices stabilize. So most recent numbers I've seen show that home prices have been going up around 3.8, 3.9% year over year. Wages are going up about 5.7%. So wage growth is actually outpacing home price growth. And the likelihood as we go through 2025 is that mortgage rates will come down a little bit. They're not going to come down as much as we would like, but they're running right around 7% now for a 30-year loan. By the end of next year, they'll probably be running at about 6%. So that combination of home prices stabilizing, mortgage rates declining a little bit, and wage growth continuing really at some point makes homes a bit more affordable. So it'll be marginally better. It's not going to be, you know, enormously better in a year. But if we had this conversation same time next year, I'd be pretty confident that we'll see things feel a little bit better from an affordability standpoint.
Well, that's good news, because it's crossed my mind as somebody who's very entrenched in the real estate world. It's crossed my mind in the past year or two. I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. Are they going to be able to afford to buy houses when they get older? And so you're saying that it's looking like things are evening back out and we don't have to jump to that worst case scenario, because it's crossed my mind to go buy them houses right now and have them as rentals until they're grown.
Well, if you could do that, you'd actually be doing them a big favor in terms of just the equity you'd be handing off to them when they're old enough to buy those houses. But you're talking about a very real world scenario. I have my kids are on the other end of the age spectrum. My son just got married in September. He's a teacher. His wife is a lawyer. We're living in Southern California. They came to me about a month ago and said, "Hey, you look at these numbers for a living. Where should we be looking? What states should we be looking to move to so that we can afford to buy a house someday?" And when you think about, you know, where I am in Southern California, the median price of a home that was sold last month was about $860,000. Now, imagine a first-time buyer, a young couple, trying to get into the market buying an $860,000 house. That means with a 10% down payment, you have to come up with $86,000. That's just to get into the game. So it's a very realistic problem. I am hopeful that we will see programs from the government, honestly, that are intended to incent builders to start creating lower priced homes, because that really is the key to all this. We need more inventory, and specifically, we need more lower priced inventory. But in the meanwhile, we're seeing hundreds of thousands of people doing exactly what my son and daughter-in-law ask me about doing. They are migrating across the country from higher priced states to lower priced states in order to become homeowners. And for your investor viewers, my counsel is follow the migration paths. If you're looking for markets that are good real estate investment opportunities, look for places where population is growing and jobs are growing.
Makes a lot of sense. So a few more questions about affordability. So, and actually I'm going to throw you a little curveball real quick that I just thought about that I was not something that I prepped you for. So I've been reading, I read about this years ago, I think the first time that Donald Trump was going to be president, about removing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from government conservatorship. And I'm reading more about that now. Do you think that they'll be able to do that? Because I guess they've been under conservatorship for like 15 years, and they were private companies to begin with, right? So what are your thoughts there? And how do you think that if they were able to do that, that it would affect the housing market?
Yeah, that's a really controversial subject. And the reality is that Fannie and Freddie underwrite virtually all of the conventional loans that are out there. For your viewers who aren't familiar with their role, they don't actually issue the loans, but they wind up buying the loans from the mortgage companies after they're issued. And so all those conventional loans, those 30-year fixed rate loans that are underneath the government's mortgage cap tend to be Fannie and Freddie. So they control an enormous percentage of all the mortgages that are out there. So could the federal government unwind the conservatorship? Of course it could, because it is the conservator. So since they took them that way, they can certainly release them. But they need to do so in an incredibly careful and thoughtful manner. When the first Trump administration was in place, they were talking about the need to bring private capital back into the market, in addition to Fannie and Freddie, with the notion that with more people funding and securing these loans, you'd have prices go down on mortgages. Right now, the government is involved in somewhere north of 90% of all loans between Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the FHA, the VA, and the USDA. So to sort of unwind the government's role in lending, my concern is, at least in the short term, you wind up with private capital replacing Fannie and Freddie, and rates actually going up a little bit. So in the long run, it could actually result in lower mortgage rates. But in the short run, most likely scenario is we see a little bit of an uptick, a minor uptick in mortgage rates. Worst case scenario is they mess up the unwinding, and the market seizes up and nobody can get a loan. So it's really one of those things that is a good talking point for politicians. But if they're going to do something like this, they really need to be careful about it.
That makes sense. And that's, above my pay grade in terms of asking even any more questions about that. But that is something that I've looked at and thought about, wondered what that would do. And since you mentioned the R word, I guess we'll move into that. So before I ask you any questions about Fed rates and mortgage rates, can you give our listeners a little overview of how the Fed rates correlate with mortgage rates and how they don't?
Yeah, that's a very popular question these days. There really is not a direct correlation between the Fed funds rate and mortgage rates. The Federal Reserve sets the Fed funds rate, which is basically what banks charge each other to borrow money from overnight. And that does have a ripple effect across all tiers of interest rates. More short-term rates than long-term rates, because again, it's an overnight rate. So it has a more direct impact on the shortest of interest rate terms. But when the Fed took as dramatic an action as it did a couple of years ago to start drastically raising the Fed funds rate in order to try and get runaway inflation under control, that really sort of upset the whole marketplace. And that uncertainty and volatility really is what caused mortgage rates to go up, even though, again, there's not a direct correlation between those two metrics. The one you want to really be watching is the yields on the 10-year U.S. Treasury bonds, because mortgage rates historically have been set to be somewhere between 1.5 and 2 points higher than those 10-year yields. And again, the 10-year yield is a longer term investment, so it's similar to the length of time most people typically hold their mortgage. And so it's become sort of a proxy. One of the reasons, and I know we'll talk about this more, but one of the reasons I do believe we'll see interest rates come down a little bit next year is the spread between those 10-year yields and 30-year mortgage rates right now is almost a full point higher than it normally is. So if the market is relatively certain that the Fed is on a course to get the Fed funds rate down a little bit and stabilize all interest rates and all lending, and we don't see any other crazy things happen from an economic standpoint, I think we'll see that gap shrink back to normal levels, and we could see mortgage rates come down almost a full point just by getting those two rates back to their normal spread. So I am hopeful that we see mortgage rates go down, you know, by about a point or so by the end of next year.
We'd all love that, wouldn't we? And so why do you think in the past few years that the spread between the 10-year yield and the actual mortgage rates has been almost a point higher than what is typical?
Well, a couple things. One is the market hates uncertainty and really doesn't like volatility. The way the Fed raised the Fed funds rate was unprecedented. We've never seen consecutive rate hikes as high as what the Fed put in place a couple of years ago. And so candidly, it just unsettled the market. And they hedged their bets by raising mortgage rates above what those bond yields were, just as a protection mechanism. The other thing is when mortgage rates started to go up, there was a belief that the Fed action would be fairly short-lived, and then they'd start to reduce the Fed funds rate, and everything would settle back down. All these people that were taking out new mortgages at 6%, 7%, and 8% would immediately refinance their loans at whatever the next lower rate was. And the people that would have bought those loans, the Fannies and the Freddies and the private capital of the world, would have basically lost money on all of those loans, because when they buy them, they anticipate holding them for a certain period of time. And if the borrowers do what the industry refers to as prepaying on their loan, in other words, paying it off earlier, that means that the people that actually own those loans at that point aren't going to make all the interest that they had banked on making. So in order to accommodate that, again, they increased that spread. So a lot of this was really kind of risk management from the capital markets, if you want to simplify it a little bit. It was a very unusual period of time in the history of the country. According to Freddie Mac, we have never seen mortgage rates double in a single calendar year. And if you go back to 2022, you'll see that rates not only doubled within a calendar year, they doubled within a few months. And that's really what slammed the brakes on the housing market, is somebody looking at buying a $400,000 house suddenly realized they could only afford a $200,000 house. And there weren't any of those available to purchase. So it really was a shock to the system. And that's what we're still trying to work our way out of today.
Yes, we are.
This episode is brought to you by the Premier Short-Term Rental Facebook group. Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth. We have nearly 50,000 members. And this is the biggest independently owned and operated SCR Facebook group. And it has been curated by yours truly, Cashflow Carl. Join us on Facebook. Search the groups for Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth. That's Short-Term Rental, Long-Term Wealth on Facebook. This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Shop Plus. Are you looking for someone to help you analyze a deal? Do you want instant access to lectures on management and short-term rental success? Join Short-Term Shop Plus for all of your vacation rental needs. STS Plus is open to the public and offered for the first time at a tremendous value. Also included is world-famous Management Monday, a weekly live session with everything you need to know about setting up your property and learning how to manage from a distance. Join today at stsplus.com. That's stsplus.com.
So the Fed, then that was a great explanation, and thank you for that. Now that the Fed has started lowering rates, and I think we're at what, like 0.75 or 75 basis points so far.
Yep.
And everybody was saying, has been saying for years, well, when the Fed lowers the interest rates, the mortgage rates are going to follow. And they didn't do that. As a matter of fact, they went up. Why do you think that is?
I guess if I were just to say, oops, that probably wouldn't be sufficient, would it? So yeah, a lot of people were saying that, I'm happy to report that if you look at all of my public statements, I wasn't one of them. I was kind of on the wait and see mode. What happened was the Fed did do the cuts, and they pretty much announced they were going to do a cut. They didn't say it in those words, but if you do Fed speak, you'd realize from some of the public statements that Chairman Powell had made that they were probably going to cut rates. So the mortgage industry actually started to adjust mortgage rates in anticipation of that cut. So if that first cut hadn't been 50 basis points, you probably would have seen mortgage rates spike immediately. But at the same time as the Fed was cutting those rates, and we got mortgage rates down to about 6% at the beginning of September, we saw unusually strong economic data coming in. Unemployment went down. Jobs numbers went up. Wage growth went up. The inflation numbers were coming in a little hotter than expected. That sort of unsettled the bonds market a little bit. And then what really threw things completely out of whack was somebody woke up and paid attention to what the federal deficit was and looked up and saw that we were $36 trillion in debt. And that our payments on the debt are now the second biggest line item in the federal budget. We actually spend more on debt payments today than we spend on military, on our entire defense mechanism. And if you wonder why that matters, it's because that means the Treasury will have to print more bonds and sell more bonds in order to cover that debt. And in order to sell more bonds, they're going to have to improve the yields on those bonds. Well, we were just talking about the relationship between yields on 10-year U.S. Treasuries and 30-year mortgage rates. And 10-year Treasury yields went up significantly, and it just happened to be timed at exactly when the Federal Reserve was making its cuts to the Fed funds rate. So mortgage rates ticked back up to be more in line with what bond yields were doing. And we were also in the middle of a presidential campaign where the only thing that the two candidates could agree on was that we needed to spend more money, which further unsettled the bonds market a little bit because nobody was talking about deficit reduction. So that's the new metric people really need to be watching. I think the Fed will do what the Fed's going to do when it comes to the Fed funds rate. It is likely that, I don't know if we'll have a cut in December. We'll probably have a couple of cuts in 2025. But I think that the reality is until we see something meaningful done to at least slow down the growth of the federal deficit, if not start to have it decline a bit, the bond markets are going to have yields high enough that force mortgage rates to be a little higher than we'd like.
And it's unfortunate.
And sorry, that was a really long-winded explanation, but there's a lot to unpack there.
No, I love long-winded. I want all the information.
Okay.
So another question that I wanted to ask you, and this is very anecdotal just from my experience in our business. So we've got offices in 20 markets across the US and we serve only investor clients. And right. What I have seen is that people act more on what the media is saying than what is actually happening with mortgage rates or Fed rates, et cetera. So as soon as they said, okay, we are going to lower the Fed rate, we had a bunch of people jump in and want to buy properties. Mm-hmm. Like everybody came off the sidelines, but the interest rates were still just as high as they had been. And same thing, this is weird. Again, guys, I've said this before on the show, I'm going to say it again. I don't care who you voted for. We love you anyway. We love everybody here. This is a safe space. But I'm about to say something about a presidential candidate or now a president. I saw the weekend that now President Trump got shot in the ear. So many people jumped back in and started buying things. And I was like, wait a minute, what does that have to do with anything? So what are your thoughts on the market acting? Not the professional market, like the Main Street investors kind of acting not necessarily based on what's actually happening, but what is being reported as happening.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting insight, Avery. And we do tend to be driven as consumers by what we're reading or what we're seeing online, which is why I always warn people about the snake oil being sold on YouTube. I think we also saw a little bit of the opposite take place. So I think you're right in that when people were sort of told that it was safe to get back into the water because the sharks were gone, that they jumped in and started swimming toward houses again. But I also know that people held back because they were reading things that led them to believe that mortgage rates would go down below 6%. So they actually missed out on that buying opportunity in early September when rates, as it turns out, bottomed out for that particular cycle before starting to tick back up. So I what I always tell people is take a look at current market conditions, figure out if you can afford to do what you think you want to do, and if you can afford to do it, do it. There was a saying going on among realtors for a while, which was date the rate,
marry the house, date the rate. Yeah, house. Oh,
and,
I hated that.
And for everybody who dated that 7 or 8% mortgage rate, they're still sitting on a 7 or 8% mortgage rate because things haven't come back down. So you really do have to be careful. I've seen I've seen investor sentiment swing back and forth a little bit during that third quarter of 2024 when President-elect Trump was shot in the ear. We did see a very optimistic and very positive outlook about the future and about current market conditions from investors, mostly those smaller individual investors. And they've been positive for the last year or so. I believe if you're an investor in real estate, you kind of have to be positive. But I also think in times where there's some risk perceived, people like physical assets, people like concrete assets, no pun intended. And we've actually seen that with foreign buyers, foreign investors as well. When their local economies get volatile and bumpy, there's a flight to safety by buying U.S. real estate. So I think there's probably a little bit of that going on, but it'll be really interesting to see how moods swing and how investors feel about things as the administration and the Congress switch hands in January.
I'm very interested to see myself. And speaking of, I mean, you're just segueing right into the next question that I have perfectly every time. So looking forward, and of course, nobody has a crystal ball, but based on your experience and the data, what do you see, A, mortgage rates, but B, the housing market in general doing in 2025?
So I'm actually optimistic about 2025 for a few reasons. One, there is more inventory coming to market. People are listing their homes. Builders are building more homes. You're probably reading headlines talking about housing starts being down. Disregard the top headline and dig into it a little bit. What you'll see is that 3 of the last 4 months we've actually had more housing starts of single family properties than we've had in the year prior. So the builders have awakened from their decade long slumber and are actually starting to build homes. The number of homes completed on an annual basis as of October, end of October, is about 1.6 million homes. So anything above 1.5 million a year, we're starting to eat into that inventory deficit. So I'm optimistic that there will be more to buy. I'm optimistic that unless there's some unforeseen economic catastrophe that nobody's forecasting at the moment, that mortgage rates could come down by a full point, or if we're lucky, even a little bit more between now and the end of next year. So more properties to buy, which kind of resolves that supply demand issue a little bit. Slightly lower financing rates, wages continuing to grow. And Avery, we just have an enormous amount of pent-up demand. We have young adults who have been off the market for 2.5 years now and looking to buy a house. So that increased demand coupled with availability and slightly better financing rates, I think equates to not a robust housing market in 2025, but a bounce off this year's bottom. I think we've bottomed out this year in terms of the number of homes sold. I think we will see more homes sold next year, maybe a 10% lift. And I think new home sales, can be as strong as the number of homes that builders decide to construct. We're actually seeing new home sales up on a year-over-year basis compared to existing home sales being down. So I'm bullish on next year. Again, I don't think we go back to 2021 numbers or anything like that, but I think we start to recover from what I hope is a bottom in the market this year.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the bottom of the market was last year, but I was wrong. We just kept trucking right along that bottom.
One other thing I think it's probably worth mentioning, and I meant to mention this earlier when we were talking about affordability and home prices. There are markets today where we actually have more inventory than we had prior to the pandemic. Oh. You're looking at states like Texas and Florida. Some of those markets actually have almost too much inventory. And because of that, or because their prices had risen too quickly, looking at markets like Austin or in Idaho, a market like Boise, where prices rose 47% in 1 year.
Oh, wow.
Just an unnatural occurrence as people left California, you know, cashed out on their two expensive houses and bought something in Boise for 20% over list for cash. But anyway, we're seeing those markets claw back a little bit. And there are actually markets across the country where home values have declined year over year, not massively, not 20-30%. But even if you're down a few percentage points year over year, you know, again, you couple that with better wages and you couple that with slightly better financing terms. So it's really important for your viewers to understand that while we're talking mostly about national numbers here, local market conditions can vary quite a bit. And if you look at different regions of the country, if you look at the Northeast, for example, home price appreciation continues to be very, very strong up there because there's not much inventory. If you look at the Midwest, prices are going up a little bit faster than they are nationally, but that's because prices in the Midwest were a lot lower than everywhere else. If you look at home prices in the Pacific Northwest or Texas or Florida or some other states that were high flying a little bit too fast, you're starting to see prices decline a little. So look at those local markets and understand what's going on in your local market rather than adhering strictly to those national headlines.
I think that's a really, really important call out too, that real estate is not national. It's right. Very market specific. It's very regional or even city specific. So Just, you know, what's happening in Phoenix is not what's happening in Omaha, Nebraska. So it's important to look at what your local market is doing. And you can do that, guys. It's pretty easy to reach out to your real estate agent in that market and they can pull all kinds of great statistics from the MLS that you can't get just on Zillow or what have you. And Rick, last question I'm going to ask you, what opportunity do you see for investor-minded buyers in 2025?
Well, that's an interesting question. We've actually seen more fix and flip activity for the last three quarters than we'd seen previously. We're nowhere near back to peak. But quarter over quarter, we've seen more properties flipped than the previous quarter. That's the first time that's happened in a couple of years. And we've seen gross margins on flips increase. And when I say gross margin, I mean gross margin. It's what was the property purchased for versus what was the property sold for. So all the expenses aren't factored into that. So there are clearly some markets where there's some flipping activity, flipping opportunities available. Tend to see a lot of that activity kind of on lower price markets or lower price properties, but where flippers can really add value to properties by fixing them up, there's some opportunities there. I would say for the next probably at least 2 years, there are going to be higher than normal number of opportunities for rental property investors, particularly single family rental property investors. And the reason I say that is because there's some research that suggests somewhere between 5 and 8 million prospective home buyers have opted out of the market right now because of affordability issues. And they're going to basically rent while they're saving money and putting it aside so that they can buy a house, afford to buy a house, or they're waiting for market conditions to improve slightly. And if you're looking at a family that was ready to move out of an apartment and buy a house, in my mind, at least, and I have no quantifiable data to prove this. This is me playing armchair psychiatrist or psychologist. I think those people would be more inclined to rent a house than another apartment because they're ready to move into a house. Mm-hmm. And that's particularly true if you happen to have a property in a good school district where people are looking to move into but maybe can't afford to buy. So I do think there are opportunities. Again, I would encourage, I know most investors, particularly small investors, the Main Street people you talk about, tend to invest almost exclusively in their home states or where they can drive to a property. But you know, a lot of the opportunities are going to be where your people are moving to. They're moving for jobs or they're moving with jobs. They're looking for opportunities at lower priced housing, whether it's rental or properties they own. And you know, if you see a market where population is growing, where jobs are growing, where wages are growing, you're likely to have a very healthy real estate market in that area as well.
All right. Well, Rick, thank you so, so much for coming on. You have been super, super insightful. And I think that our listeners are really going to enjoy this one. If our listeners want to follow you on social media, how can they do that?
Pretty easy to do. I'm on X, I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn. Just under my name, Rick Sharga. You can also look up my company, cjpatrick.com, and find me that way. But I post on X. It still seems weird calling it X.
Right.
and on LinkedIn quite a bit, and always enjoy connecting with real estate minded folks on those channels as well.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.